Good morning. So yesterday, I brought up a story. The story is from the Book of Serenity, case 75, in case you want to look it up later. the story is about the monk Ruyan and his teacher Yanto. So the thing was, yesterday I didn't tell you the whole story. So today I'm going to tell you the whole story, talk about that. Ruyan asked Yanto, "What is the fundamental constant principle?" Yanto said, "Moving." And the Ruyan asked again, "When moving, then what?" And Yanto said, "You don't see the fundamental constant principle." So the story goes on. Ruyan stood there thinking. Yanto said, "If you agree, you are not yet free of sense and matter. If you don't agree, you'll forever be sunk in birth and death. If you agree, you are not yet free of sense and matter. If you don't agree, you'll forever be sunk in birth and death." So when you first encounter these kind of stories, they're rather puzzling and intellectually unsatisfying, because they don't seem to go anywhere. They seem to be full of self-contradictions. The first two lines, what is the fundamental constant principle? And the answer, moving. This is kind of a Buddhist joke, right? So, the fundament. I mean, I know it's not very funny, but what is the fundamental constant principle? The fundamental constant principle is inconstancy, impermanence, constant change. That's the fundamental constant principle. This is what passes for a Buddhist joke. And the second two lines are something about, the limits of our vision, what we can't see. What we can't see by taking the mind road, as it's commonly referred to in Zen literature, the path of intellectual understanding. That road, it's a valuable road. Human beings have done a lot with that road, but it has its limits. There's some limits to the vision of the mind road. And then we get this line about the seeming peril of agreeing or not agreeing. It seems like bad things are going to happen. We won't get free of sense and matter, or we'll be sunk forever in birth and death. Birth and death is just basically a synonym for suffering in Buddhism. Sense and matter, is a synonym for being stuck in the duality of self and other. So neither of these places are places we want to get stuck or sunk. In the commentary on the case, it says, to the line that says, Ruyan stood there thinking, the commentary says, you know, there's a commentary on each line of the case. And the commentary for that line says, have you no shame? So, standing around thinking is not favored response. Yeah, so as I say, sometimes these stories are not very intellectually satisfying. They lack certainty. They lack most stories that we commonly like have some outcome, and it doesn't seem. It seems here we just have stasis. We don't really go anywhere, and maybe partly that's the point. And not falling into agreement or disagreement. What is there? Is there some third path? The case actually says, not later on, the case says, not agreeing, not disagreeing, and not the middle either. But there's a very helpful there's a very helpful verse that goes with this case. A very wonderful verse. And I'll read you this verse. The round pearl has no hollows. The great gem isn't polished. What is esteemed by people of the way is having no edges. Removing the road of agreement, senses and matter are empty. The free body, resting on nothing, stands out unique and alive. The round pearl has no hollows. The great gem isn't polished. What is esteemed by people of the way is having no edges. Removing the road of agreement, senses and matter are empty. The free body, resting on nothing, stands out, unique and alive. You know, I work on these talks in advance, and then sometimes different things, you know, if you spend time with this kind of language, different things seem important. And, when I read this, I thought the most important line really was, what is esteemed by people of the way is having no edges. This is the one that spoke to me anyway. This, I don't say it's the most important line. I'm saying that line spoke to me very deeply. And it spoke to me particularly deeply this morning as I read it again. And I thought, if Zen people had a prayer, this would be the prayer. May I be a person of no edges. May I be round and smooth like a bright pearl. May I be unpolished. I need no improvement, like the great raw gem. I think if I composed this prayer, I would say, may my eyes have no edges. Oh, may my ears have no edges. May my nose and sense of smell have no edges. May my tongue and sense of taste have no edges. May my whole body and its sense of touch have no edges. May my mind and my thoughts have no edges. May all my actions of body, speech, and mind have no edges. You know, if you were wearing, I've never worn a pearl necklace, but if you were wearing a pearl necklace, you know, it would be very round and smooth, and it wouldn't, it wouldn't catch in any of your garments because it would be round and smooth. So, you know, this is the sort of feeling of this prayer that I feel in this poem. May I be a person. May I be a person who isn't caught by things, isn't caught by objects of sense experience. May I be that kind of person. May I have that kind of speech. May I act from that kind of place as a person who isn't caught. That has no edges. I'm not that kind of person. I'm not that fully realized person of no edges. And probably neither are you. This is why, I would say why, we practice sitting upright in self-fulfilling samadhi. When we sit upright in self-fulfilling samadhi, according to our teaching, the whole phenomenal world turns into the Buddha mind seal. And the Buddha mind seal, like the smooth round pearl, has no edges. This is to be deeply wished for. This is to be an aspirant to, in a non-grasping way, but with some determination, some devotion, some loving, and of course, then, you know, when we find that we act and speak And we see that we have these edges, and we notice that in our action and in our speech, we manifested those edges. Then we have the practice of confession. It's very important to have that practice. And as practitioners of the way, we will avail ourselves of that practice over and over again. My teacher, I don't know if he still does this, but he used to discourage people from saying that they were sorry when they acted, you know, as a person with edges, and they could see the impact of that on others. So, you know, maybe just confession is enough, you know. I acted that way. I know it didn't feel good. I know the way I behaved was hurtful. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm sorry is okay too. So the last line of the poem is just stand out, unique and alive, resting on nothing. A free body resting on nothing stands out, unique and alive. So I felt like it was important to like tie these talks some way into the subject of our study this fall. And I saw a lot of correspondence between that line and the 28th verse of the 30 verses on consciousness only. This is the verse that Ben Connolly says, his first line, I think, of the chapter is, how do you describe enlightenment? This is the 28th verse. When consciousness does not perceive any object, then it rests in consciousness only. When there is nothing to grasp, there is no grasping. And just stand out, unique and alive, a free body resting on nothing. When consciousness does not perceive any object, then it rests in consciousness only. When there is nothing to grasp, then there is no grasping. This line brings up the idea of rest. So as I said quite a few times, probably somewhat ad nauseum during my talks on the Yogacara, the function of consciousness, Vijnana, is to divide subject and object. That's the job of consciousness. That's the job of everyday mind. Okay? Our everyday mind. The job of the everyday mind is to divide subject and object into two. So what about when consciousness takes a break from that job, goes on holiday, takes a vacation, rests, doesn't do its job, I think what we're doing here in our sesshin is letting consciousness rest. We may be seeing that mind and objects are coming up. But hopefully what we're seeing as we see mind and objects, like mind and thoughts coming up, what we might be resting in is consciousness only, meaning that we are resting in taking responsibility. We're seeing our minds as the birthplace of objects. It's not that objects don't exist, you know. This point is made, most contemporary teachers of this Yogacara school say, it's not that objects don't exist. It's that they exist in a certain way for you. They exist in a certain way for you. You imbue them. You imbue objects with certain interpretation. Even just by opening your eyes. So, resting in consciousness only, we take great responsibility for the way objects appear to us and how we interpret them. We don't blame objects for our state of mind. We don't blame the actions of other people for our state of mind. We take a lot of responsibility for what arises in our consciousness. And Zazen is this sort of wonderful encouragement. And I mean, it gives us courage. Zazen gives us courage to take this responsibility for what's arising in our body and mind. And we feel, yes, I can own that. I can own my feelings. I see that they arise in me. These feelings and thoughts arise in me. And that, as Yogacara says, you know, the objective world is an objective support. It's an objective support for my consciousness. It's an objective support. So we become, recognizing that we have all this wonderful objective support for our consciousness, we become very intimate with ourselves and these objective supports. But particularly, well, we really become very intimate with this relationship. We become very intimate with this relationship. And when this relationship has no edges, when this relationship is quite reciprocal and understanding and peaceful and restful, when the relationship of mind and object is like that, then we actually do feel free. We actually do feel free. Yeah, Karen and I stopped by the Raley's on the way here to get something, and we had a rather unsatisfying relationship interaction with the clerk who was serving there. And I wasn't happy about it, but I was thinking about this teaching, and I thought, well, I think the case is that there's a little edge on our side of the counter, but there's quite a big edge on the other side of the counter. And so, you know, there's these edges that are, you know, rubbing up against each other, and it's not very satisfying. But I was also okay with the fact that it wasn't very satisfying. I didn't like it, but I recognized that, you know, I wasn't going to be able to do much about that. It was just what it was. So I think, you know, in our sesshin and in after our sesshin, we can be, you know, we will continue our study of our edges, other people's edges, and we will understand, hopefully, although we have, you know, we have a great aspiration to be a smooth, round pearl that doesn't catch on anything. It may not always be like that. And we have to accept that aspect of our lives as well. So it says here, just keep sitting still in silent contradiction. Who wrote that? Very strange. Silent contradiction of the fundamental constant of discriminative awareness. Take in everything that comes. Turn no experience away at the door. There will come a time when you rest in mind only. It says here, and it will change your life. You can imagine a lot of things when you're sitting in front of a computer, you know? You know, I don't always, or maybe, yeah, maybe I would say, I mostly don't enjoy the prospect of giving a Dharma talk. It's not very easy for me. I have enthusiasm for the Dharma, but I sometimes or often think, I don't know if I can express it. How could I express it and how could I not express it? If you express it, you're sunk in sense and matter. If you don't express it, you never get free from birth and death.